everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing the Buckmaster Show. We welcome you to the program. Day before Valentine's. It's Monday, February 13th, 2023. Our show now in our 13th year, broadcasting from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we have pretty much every show we have done over the past 11, 12 years conveniently archived for you. There is a tremendous amount of content there for you. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for the Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe and his family, they do just such a beautiful job with their custom frame mirrors, art for your walls. Moe is a fantastic photographer. Great gallery work over there. They do, of course, picture framing. And if you want it, your items on the wall in a certain way, let Moe do it. He'll come out and put them up on the wall the way you want it. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. This week's Monday one-on-one is with Dr. Michael Schaller, Regents Professor of History at the University of Arizona. Professor Schaller specializes in 20th century American politics and foreign policy. He's the author of nearly three dozen books, several of them on Ronald Reagan. Professor, how are you?
Very good. Thank you, Bill.
What was it about early on in your career you did focus on Ronald Reagan? What was it about Reagan that was so attractive to you?
Well, I was intrigued by how somebody who was criticized either as an amiable dunce or a evil Darth Vader had managed to capture the attention and support of so many Americans and successfully served two terms as president, and imprinting on American politics his vision of America and its destiny. So I was intrigued by how that happened.
He set the stage for the model, the entertainer politician model.
He really did. Early on in his life, long before the presidency, in the 1950s, he had become a very effective spokesman for General Electric.
Yes, I remember that.
And doing sort of promotional presentations, and then was a host for various television shows, Death Valley Days and others. And then was recruited to boost Barry Goldwater, the 1964 Republican nominee, to give a sort of last-minute inspirational speech.
I actually remember that in 1964. That was an election eve speech.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Goldwater's campaign was floundering in most of the country. But Reagan brought a sort of upbeat, inspirational tone to it, which really differentiated him from both Goldwater, who was sort of a dour, eat your vegetables kind of guy.
Right.
It's not that their policies were so much different, but their presentation was different. Reagan could be self-deprecating and upbeat and inspirational, where Goldwater was downbeat and critical. And even though Goldwater lost, it really propelled Reagan into the national spotlight.
I was thinking about the famous Goldwater ad with the mushroom cloud.
Right.
And I'm wondering, from a historical point of view, did that make that much difference in the race?
The ad only played once or twice, but commentary about it played for weeks before the election. It was a case where it – the ad itself was unfair. Goldwater wasn't planning to blow up the world, but it raised this fear in people's minds. Just like another ad, which I remember vividly. I was, 16 or something like that? It's a picture when Goldwater talked about privatizing Social Security or making it a voluntary system. There was an ad in which a moving truck arrives at a nursing home. And four burly guys walk into the nursing home, throw grandma out of a bed, and toss the bed out the window. You know, that's not exactly what Goldwater was saying. But anybody who looked at that came away saying, oh, my God, he wants to throw grandma out the window.
Yeah. You know, I first covered Ronald Reagan when I was working for NBC Radio in Las Vegas in the 70s. He was talking at the time about government being too big, government being the problem. It really wasn't people didn't really latch on to the whole thing about government being the problem until after Reagan then became president. And not only did a few people latch onto it, but so many, and to this day, people say, of many conservatives, government is the problem. You have lawmakers up in Phoenix who are calling public schools government schools.
Right. I would just dispute one part of that.
Go ahead.
I would say that Reagan first used that trope of government is the problem, taxes are the problem, regulation is the problem, in his gubernatorial campaign in California in 66. It didn't become national.
Right.
So you're right.
Right.
It doesn't become a national phenomena really until 1980, that campaign for when Reagan was elected. But if you look back at his run for the governorship, what he talked about is how regulation was stifling business, how taxes were a disincentive to work, how government interference was holding back the free market. Now, as governor, you know, which was really the beginning of his political career from 66 to 74, Reagan didn't cut taxes. He didn't cut much regulation. But he talked it and he brought it into the national sphere as legitimate critiques of sort of what had become big government since the New Deal.
Reaganomics, when I say that, many will say, oh my gosh, Reaganomics was the best thing since sliced bread.
Well, it certainly was presented by that like that, and we still have politicians who talk about tax cuts will pay for themselves if we just, you know, the famous Laffer curve, that, you know, the more you cut taxes, the more business would grow. The only trouble is that it never happened. First of all, despite an initial big tax cut when he became president in 1981, taxes overall stayed the same. They shifted as to who paid taxes. Middle income and lower income people basically paid more taxes, especially payroll taxes, Social Security, Medicare. The wealthy and business taxes were cut, but the total amount was about the same. What didn't occur during the Reagan years, 81 to 89, in his presidency, is growth that was faster than normal. People look back on what they remember with the dismal late 1970s. Inflation was high. Unemployment was high.
A malaise,
stagflation. And growth during the Reagan years was much better than the late 1970s. But it was actually lower than the 1960s or the 1990s during the Great Society and early Nixon years. And during the Bush-Clinton years, growth was higher than in the Reagan years. What's often forgotten about Reaganomics is that it never paid for itself. Reagan inherited $1 trillion, sounds small today, $31 trillion in national debt, $1 trillion when Reagan took office. It was $3 trillion when he left office. It tripled. You know, he evoked a wonderful image. He said, if our national debt, as a candidate in 1981, he said, if our national debt was silver dollars stacked upon one another, they'd extend halfway to the moon. What he never said was that when he left office, they'd go to the moon and halfway back.
We're speaking with Michael Schaller, Regents Professor of History at the University of Arizona. He is our Monday one-on-one guest. One of your books is titled Right Turn, American Life in Reagan-Bush Era, the 1980 to 1992. Who made the conscious effort early on in Reagan's presidency to go after the evangelical Republicans?
Well, Reagan himself, Mike Deaver, one of his advisors,
right.
Ed Meese, another one of his advisors, they recognized a sort of a sleeping giant among evangelicals. Evangelicals were disproportionately in the South, certainly at that time. They generally were not political. When they did vote, they voted Democratic. Jimmy Carter, a self-described born-again Christian, captured most of the evangelical vote in 19, 76 when he ran against Gerald Ford. Ronald Reagan captured most of that evangelical vote in 1980, and Republicans have harvested that vote ever since. But the reasons for it, in part, were Reagan appealed to uneasiness about abortion, about prayer in schools, about sexual mores, and sort of brought the evangelicals under the Republican umbrella using those issues.
Those issues resonate today. What you just rattled off sounds like it could come from a Donald Trump campaign rally.
Oh, I think they've become the formula, the recipe, the secret sauce of Republican politics.
Michael Scheller is with us. He's our Monday one-on-one guest, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Right now, I want to talk about our favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. I love Mona's. If I hadn't had dental surgery on Friday, that's why I wasn't doing the show, I would have been up at Mona's getting one of their cinnamon rolls. But since I'm on a soft liquid diet for a few more days, that will have to wait. But it doesn't have to wait for you. They are open 6:30 for doors open Tuesday through Saturday. 7 o'clock on Sunday morning, they do take Monday off. monasdanishbakery.com is their website. We'll have more on the Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Monday One-on-One presented by Moe's Gallery and Fort Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. This week's Monday One-on-One guest is Dr. Michael Schaller, Regents Professor of History at the University of Arizona, where he specializes in 20th century American politics and foreign policies, the author of nearly three dozen books, several on Ronald Reagan. We've talked a little bit about domestic policy, and one thing that is pointed to by those that say Ronald Reagan was such a great president was that President Reagan ended the Cold War. Did he?
Yes and no. Like all the tough questions in the world, historians and others say it's complex. Mm-hmm. He certainly made Americans feel more secure. Remember, he became president at a low point in America's position in the world. The Iran hostage crisis had been going on for over 400 days.
And the botched attempt to end the hostage crisis.
Yes, that made it even worse. The planes colliding
the
in the desert.
The death in the desert, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and the hostages were released on Inauguration Day, even though it was Jimmy Carter who had negotiated that. The Iranians chose that day as an ultimate humiliation of Carter. It wasn't because, as some claim, they were scared of what Reagan might do. But nevertheless, he reaped the benefit from it. And there were other victories, such as the invasion of Grenada to free American medical students, which were trumpeted as great triumphs. Mm-hmm. There was a big arms buildup. Arms military spending doubled in the first years of the Reagan administration. There was a move to embargo sales of certain items to the Soviets as punishment for their perceived aggressiveness in Afghanistan, which they had invaded in 1979. Of course, what's often forgotten is America mostly sold agricultural products to the Soviets, and that was boosted under Reagan. We embargoed things we didn't sell to them, basically. But what's often forgotten is there is a big American buildup, and Soviet policy changes after 1985 with the advent of Mikhail Gorbachev. But the rooster crows at dawn, but that doesn't mean that brings up the sun. The American buildup is mostly 81 to 84. Soviet policy doesn't change. It really changes under Gorbachev. And what I would give Reagan a lot of credit for is, despite his visceral anti-communism, which was real, he recognized that Gorbachev was a new kind of Soviet leader with different values and intentions. And Reagan pivoted to cooperativeness with Gorbachev. And so despite, some would say because of his hard line, I would say despite his hard line, he managed to reach a series of accommodations with the Soviets. And maybe it's simplistic to say, you know, not won or lost, but I'd say the Soviets under Gorbachev called it off. They called off the Cold War. It's not so much America won as Gorbachev saw it as irrelevant. It's a very revealing thing. Gorbachev, just before he became, I think, head of the Soviet system, went to Singapore. He was the first Soviet leader since Lenin who had traveled around the world.
Wow.
And he realized Singapore made more computer chips than the entire Soviet Union. You know, Singapore about the size of South Tucson.
Yeah.
You know, and recognized that they could not go on domestically or internationally the way they did. Reagan accommodated that and responded positively to that. And I would give him a lot of credit for that.
We need to talk about something the Reagan administration is very famous for, saying no to drugs. What were the long-term costs of that?
The long-term costs were devastating to many communities in the United States. We're still in the midst of a series of drug crises.
Sure, fentanyl,
We've had war on drugs since the 19-teens,
mm-hmm.
when opiates and then later marijuana was mm-hmm. Criminalized. Almost none have had any effect on levels of drug use. In the 1980s, there were actually relatively few deaths from drugs, about 5,000 a year of overdoses. I'm not minimizing.
Sure.
But it was a relatively small number.
Yeah.
More people were killed in drug violence
right.
than actually died from drug use. The Reagan administration, Nancy Reagan's, her hallmark was just say no to drugs.
Yes.
It had almost no effect on levels of drug use. But what did happen was at the state and federal level, the extension of anti-drug laws for longer minimum sentences, three strikes and you're out, and the size of the state and federal prison population explodes. Levels of drug use don't change at all.
Mm.
So I would say just say no was a dismal failure, and with long-term both economic and social repercussions.
Was Ronald Reagan a political strongman in kind of the mold of what Donald Trump is often characterized as?
I would say it was different. I think Reagan understood his own strengths and knew how to target those strengths. He was very good with a prepared speech. You know, he was a natural performer as
sure
an actor.
He was.
He was once denigrated. He said something about, I'm happiest when I wake up in the morning and I get a piece of paper that says, you know, stand to the left, stand to the right, you'll go down. And people denigrated. He's a fool. He has to be. But no, yeah. These were actors' directions.
Sure, sure.
He knew that one side of his face photographed better mm-hmm. than the other.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that if you turned it a certain way, it projected strength and self-assurance. And he recognized those strengths. Well, you saw him sort of be more pitiful was in unscripted news conferences where he couldn't answer questions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when he was on, he was on.
Well, it's kind of like Trump. When Trump is off a teleprompter, he does so much better than when he's on
right.
the Trump.
Right. It's sort of in some ways the opposite.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's
yes.
like the opposite.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I do think he certainly projected a kind of strength. He once said, you know, I don't know if anybody could do this job if they weren't an actor. And that kind of self-deprecating
yeah,
humor,
yeah.
of course, endeared him to many people. And you could say about Trump is that part of his strength also came as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his television shows mm-hmm. in the 90s and 2000s. Mm-hmm. It was the bitter and the sweet you got with Reagan.
And here we are with the immigration issue. Michael Schell, our immigration policy in this country, we haven't really had any significant reforms maybe since going back to Reagan.
Oh, yeah. In the late 80s, Reagan, who was a believer
yeah.
in high levels of immigration and an amnesty.
Yes.
The immigration bills passed under Reagan provided for large-scale amnesty for people who had immigrated without papers and high levels of future immigration. That was considered pro-business, pro-American. You know, there wasn't the sense of being threatened or it undermining American values.
I had a listener who wanted your take on Gorbachev and NATO. And Reagan, according to this listener, said that the United States would not encroach on the Russian border at all. Some of your thoughts, please.
Well, yes, that's been an issue. And both Reagan and then later Bush, George W., H.W. Mm-hmm. Bush, the first mm-hmm. Bush, both seemed, they and their deputies seemed to tell the Russians, first Gorbachev and then Yeltsin, that there would be a limit. NATO wouldn't encroach.
Yes.
But that was never written in stone. And it's very much debated whether they said that or they intimated that or it was inferred or implied. So it's unclear. I think what they meant was in the immediate term, there wouldn't be an effort to surround and suppress Russia. I don't think they necessarily meant it in the long term.
All right. Wrapping it up here, just about a minute left. So let's talk about the Reagan legacy. And is today's Republican Party the party of Ronald Reagan?
They often describe themselves as that. on the issue of taxes and government and spending and so forth. But I would say that although they use the rhetoric of Reagan, they go far beyond what he meant and talked about. When Reagan said government is the problem or taxes are too high, they were within limits. He didn't oppose all government.
But it is the template today for that Republican Party.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
I think they've taken the rhetoric and taken it to an extreme.
Legacy?
The legacy is, I suppose, I'm trying to think of what the legacies are. Certainly, the biggest legacy we deal with today is a far more conservative judiciary. Reagan's appointments to the Supreme Court and lower federal courts keep echoing today.
Excellent. Great conversation with Dr. Michael Schaller. Thank you, Professor, for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
Dr. Schaller, our Monday one-on-one guest presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Be right back.
Take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, Green Things 3384 East River Road. They're open daily. They're in their 53rd year of business. It's time for our monthly interview segment featuring the monthly Scam Alert presented by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. One of our regulars is with us. Actually, she's becoming a regular, and we really are glad she is. Jessie Ash is with us, communications specialist at the BBB, and Denise Alvarez, operations manager at the BBB. Denise and Jessie, how are you guys doing? Getting ready for Valentine's Day?
Yes.
Yes, doing great.
Don't tell me something like Valentine's Day, Denise, scammers are coming out of the woodwork.
Yes.
Why?
Yes. They
see an opportunity.
Absolutely.
They'll go for it.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. They do that all the time, and Valentine's is not any different. So we have a few scams that are actually that they just resurface during this time of year for Valentine's Day. So we wanted to give the audience a couple of tips. You know, if they're buying gifts for their loved ones or ordering flowers, we wanted to make sure that they knew about these scams.
Of course, Valentine's Day, Jessie, is synonymous with romance. So why don't we begin with online dating? How's that scam working?
So these scams resurface every year and target vulnerable people looking for love. They tend to create fake online dating profiles and fake relationships, and then they quickly start asking for money.
And then what happens, Denise?
Well, unfortunately, some of the people that they connect with actually end up sending them money. We had a case a few years ago where they were just, you know, thousands of dollars. They sent around $12,000 to one individual.
What?
Yes. He claimed to be in the military and had all of these fake profiles. And $12,000 later, these women that he had been talking to caught on.
So how does this work? I mean, you're doing online dating, Jessie, and then somebody is saying, well, I need money?
Right. They create like a fake story where they need money or they need help or they would like to come and visit you and you need to send them money so that they can purchase their plane ticket. And it's just really a fake person.
And they say maybe, you said they're in the military, or they say maybe they're working overseas. They can't meet the person.
Correct.
But they really need some money to hold them over.
Yes. And you wouldn't believe how many people actually send money over. They pretend to be in the military. They can't come over and visit them, but they ran into a medical issue or they have an emergency and they don't have the funds. And so by this time, they've already created that relationship with the person and they end up getting the money.
Is this called catfishing?
Yes, it is.
Why is that?
It's a form of deception where it's not the person in the profile picture might not even be the person that you're talking to. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's called catfishing.
So they may have some like, you know, this Hollywood looking kind of guy or a woman that's a model that's
right.
Not really the model, you know. So, oh, my goodness, too good to be true.
Right.
And you know what they say when it comes to the BBB scam alert. If it sounds too good to be true, it is.
Correct.
How about what can we do to avoid this? What would be something very simple? Jessie.
Be to never send money mm-hmm. or personal information because it can be used for identity theft and also you would be out a lot of money.
Would they sometimes ask Denise for a credit card?
Correct. Don't share any credit card or bank information with them because once you give that out, now they have access to your accounts.
So cut off the contact?
Yes, absolutely. If they start asking for money, you know, you really want to just block them. Don't talk to them anymore because it, like you said, it's probably a scam.
Would they go so far, Denise, as to say, could you forward your bank account information?
Oh yeah, absolutely. They'll ask and they only need one person to say yes, right?
Only one, yeah. And then they clean out your bank account. So give us some other ones. How about some imposter scams?
Yeah, so scammers create fake websites where they offer jewelry or dating sites, and you know, you log in trying to find the perfect gift, and it turns out that it's a fake website.
These are professionally done, though, aren't they?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We were just saying, you know, they invest a lot of time and money into it because they know that the return on investment is probably greater than what they put in.
Mm. So again, be very leery of somebody that's asking for credit card information. They really are looking to steal your personal data information.
Right. Yes.
How about some other scams, Jesse, that we should be aware of?
BBB.
People like to send flowers.
Yes.
On Valentine's Day. Don't tell me they're into that as well.
Yes. We have received several reports on our scam tracker about fake florist scams. People are paying a lot of money for beautiful floral arrangements, and then the recipient never gets the scam.
And Denise, I bet the price looks really tempting. They're probably, you know, let me see, 2 dozen long stem roses for $8.
Right.
$8.95. And guess what? You give your credit card information, nothing's going to arrive at your door.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And those prices, you know, that's what, you know, usually gets people to pay for them, because they are low prices and you're thinking, oh, the pictures look beautiful. But, you know, you want to look at the URL, make sure that it has that little lock. We've talked about that. It's a security. Make sure that if you're putting any payment information into that site, that it has that little lock, so you know it's a secure website. And then also you want to do your research. Just compare the prices. If you find out that, you know, those 2 dozen roses are, you know, $60 somewhere else.
Yeah,
you know,
which they are.
Yeah. Look into it. Right. Before you make that purchase, because then you either don't get the arrangement or you don't get the arrangement that you thought that person would get.
Are you updating your scam tracker all the time?
Yes. So we get scams every day. And we want to encourage people to go to bbb.org/scam tracker so that they can report any scams that they've been victims of.
Jesse Ash is with us and Denise Alvarez. Jesse, anything going on with your mixers? They've been very popular.
Yes, our next networking mixer is coming up on February 23rd from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Noble Hops on Alvernon near Reed Park. We also have one in March on the 23rd, and that one will be at Fire Truck Brewing Company, the new pizza company on Speedway and Culp. And we're really excited about
We love Noble Hops, of course, one of our long-term sponsors. Denise, are you guys involved with the pet parade?
Yes, we're going to be there. So the pet parade will be on 4th Avenue on Sunday, February 19th at 10 a.m. We're looking forward, hoping that we won't have any rain, but we will be there.
And that is a presentation of Pima Animal Care Center, another organization that we support here on the Buckmaster Show. That's going to be a fun event, 10 a.m. Sunday, February 19th on 4th Avenue. Torch Awards, that's coming up May 19th.
Correct,
Denise,
yes.
What can you tell us?
It will be at Casino del Sol, May 19th, and we'll be celebrating our ethical businesses. We're in the application process right now. And then stay tuned on BBB.org for more information about ticket pricing.
Are you taking applications now or what? How's the process going?
The nomination period ended. And so if you were nominated, you were contacted. And then there's an application process that you have to fill out. And then the judging begins, and we'll announce the finalists in April. And then we'll have that big celebration May 19th.
Coming up, IRS time. We kind of touched on this a month ago, but now really everybody's getting their material together. Jesse, IRS scams are out there, right?
Yes, they are.
What's going on there?
There are often people contacted by scammers pretending to be the IRS, asking for money or payments. And just remember that the IRS will never contact you directly by phone.
I get some of these calls, Denise, and I'm from the IRS, and I have a case number here. What?
Yes. Yes. They make it, they, you know, call and pretend they are the IRS, create urgency for you to call them back, ask for payment information. And so what you want to do is never call back the number that they leave in the voicemail or the caller ID. You want to make sure you go online and actually visit the IRS website and call that number, because if you call the number that they left, you're calling back the scammer. And so you want to double check. And I know the IRS has long wait times, but it's worth the time for you to talk to them before you make any payments to anybody that's called you.
Yeah, do not call back the fake IRS people. All right, Jesse and Denise, always a pleasure. And again, before we let you go, it's BBB for BetterBusinessBureau.org/scam tracker. And this really helps everybody when you do report this, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes.
Because you can find out what's really going on in your area.
Correct.
Ladies, thank you very much. Hope you both have a wonderful Valentine's Day.
Thank you, too.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Dr. Mark Sykes is in the house from the Planetary Science Institute. What in the world is going on with these objects that are being shot down? Want to hear what Dr. Sykes has to say about that right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. It's greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Also, our great sponsor, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. You know, it's only about a three-hour drive over to Silver City, and there's a lot to do. Not just the outdoor activities, the very obvious things like Gila National Wilderness, but the indoor activities as well, like Western New Mexico University and the museum there, which is really a nice museum. They have one of the finest, probably the finest, I think, of the Mimbres pottery that has been collected in that region. Just some beautiful items at their museum at Western New Mexico University. Their website is southwestnewmexico.com. pimaanimalcarecenter.org. Before you start your planning, your drive over there, might want to take a look at that. Dr. Mark Sykes is with us, CEO and director of the homegrown Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute, which just passed its now 51st anniversary. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hey, Bill.
What the heck is going on with these objects that... Let's see, four of them in approximately the last 2 weeks. There was an object that was shot down over Lake Huron. What's going on?
Well, the Chinese...
What's your take?
The Chinese balloon was obvious, you know, in terms of where it came from and all that. These other little guys that are being shot down with irregularity, it seems, are interesting because they're described as being small, size of a small car,
right?
And
a Volkswagen, I've heard.
Oh, and two are said to be cylindrical in shape, and one an octagon, and it's got some strings on it, rope on it, or something. And now the commander of NORAD says that he's going to let the intelligence and other agencies decide whether or not these could be alien spacecraft.
What?
And
he really said that.
Well, yeah. And there are people that wonder that, and it's like, well, it's an interesting question to ask, I think. Now, weather balloons can be, and these aren't shaped like regular balloons, but they can be extremely light, and they're buoyant because they're filled with hydrogen or helium, mm-hmm. and so they can lift weights,
and they have a certain signature shape, usually.
But you can make shaped balloons. You give some rigidity, mm-hmm. and
these are not your birthday party balloons.
Well, yes, yes,
it got away.
And so it depends on how do they move. Are they floating in the wind? Are they moving against the wind? Because none of these smaller things indicate that it has any external propulsion system. So if they were moving in a way that wouldn't otherwise be possible, given the conditions, well, that might be one clue. Another thing is that these balloons have to be very light. I mean, to be floating up there, and weather balloons can be like hundreds of grams. Mm-hmm. You know, for a balloon that filled this room, mm-hmm. and so you have to have a fairly light material. So if you had some evidence that it was metallic or something like that, that mm-hmm. would be very hard to explain. How did it get up here? Even if it's filled with hydrogen or helium, well, then that's another question. But my
what's
tendency is to think that there's some high school students who are going to be grounded for a month.
What?
You know, I mean, to me, this just sounds like, yeah, that it could be cylindrical-shaped objects that I haven't looked to see if you could buy it online, that somebody's just, you know, letting loose. Now, they are still a hazard. You know, because 30,000 feet, 20,000 to 40,000 feet.
That really is dangerous.
Yeah, that's where airlines are. And so those things, there's a good reason for shooting those things down.
Yeah.
Of course, if it was teenagers, then it's got to be on TikTok. So because who would not?
Yeah. So the first one is an obvious one that was shot down, and maybe even the second, which was shot down near the Yukon border, Alaska and Canada. These other two.
Well, not really, because that was also a small car.
It was a
size
small one.
Two.
Yeah, you're right.
Cylinder,
so only the first of the four was the big one. But the propulsion system and the avionics, it doesn't seem to be like something that is directing these, correct?
We haven't heard anything about how they're moving.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if they were something that small is moving up there, then something very unusual is going on, because you can't float at that altitude, mm-hmm. if you have, say, like more than 10 pounds.
So do you think that is a possibility, though, that it could be some kind of a prank?
Oh, absolutely. It could be a prank.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people throw stuff in the air all the time.
Yeah.
You know, balloons and things like that. And you know, or candle lit things, you know, didn't get up to 40,000 feet. But
probably, yeah, though, not your standard birthday balloon.
But if you're a teen, you know, it would be, how cool would it be? I mean, I would have loved to have done it when I was that age.
That might be something you might have explored at that age.
You know, yeah, yeah. It's just a lack of materials. But but at the same time, I would say that just like anything else, if somebody says, well, could it be an alien spacecraft? You don't say, oh, no, of course not. You know, you say, well, how would we test that hypothesis?
Yes.
Is it moving funny? Is it made of material that would make it too heavy to possibly be floating up there? Mm-hmm. You know, it's these are reasonable questions to ask.
Open mind, right, Mark Sykes? before we go, in other space news, although the balloons don't really qualify, well, let's say other air news.
If there's an alien option, they qualify.
Yeah, they do, don't
they?
We're
all about astrobiology.
One of the things that the U.S. Space Force would like to eventually do is have rockets at the ready. In other words, if they needed to do a launch, Mark, they would like to have it within 24 hours. That's kind of hard to do right now. I don't think we can do that. You'd have to have rockets at the ready, and there's going to be a kind of a test coming up in May.
Yeah, I love it. A test in May
for rocket readiness,
fly and ready 24 hours. But anyway, it's a reasonable idea, but to do that with what's the company's name?
Firefly is the company.
You know, and they've got kind of regular style rockets.
Yep.
That launch off a launch pad, so you'd have to have them already prefabricated and within close proximity to where you'd be launching them from, probably in several locations. If you want to put something in a polar orbit or equatorial orbit or some other angle, you know, because you always have to worry about where the rocket is flying over on the way up in case there's an accident. It's an interesting question. And then, is there enough business to keep that profitable?
Mm-hmm.
And so you probably have other customers as well. So since they're launching things into Earth orbit, then they'd be launching other payloads as well. And you know, it's kind of great to see all these companies, small companies that are out there going after a market for putting things in orbit. And you know, whether it's these small sats or internet satellites,
kind of the Wild West of an industry industry in its infancy.
Yes,
really.
Yes, it is. It is. And so we'll see what, you know, new markets open up. And they're largely, of course, driven by government because, you know, defense is a big contractor for satellite services and orbital services. And one could certainly see the need for a quickly deployed asset, you know, particularly when you have wars going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Artemis, the first mission, the recent moon mission, everybody's saying it was pretty much a success, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so they're going ahead with the next project, which is Artemis 2, which will be an orbit, I believe, of the moon, and then Artemis 3 would actually be a moon landing.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And I think Artemis 3 will be, you know, later in the decade. We'll see things get pushed around, and which is, you know, what we did in the Apollo days, right?
Sure we do.
You
know? But we seem to have a much more urgent, there was more of an urgency then.
Yes, yes, yes. It was all part of the Cold War. But, you know, the expense, you know, may be the ultimate stopper.
It will.
For the Artemis program.
I'm sure it seems to be always. It's the bottom line, right?
Each one of those, just the launch vehicle itself, is said to be like $4 billion.
Ooh. All right. Mark Sykes, PSI.edu. Didn't have my notes right in front of me. I have memorized it. Mark Sykes, always a pleasure. Thanks, Mark.
Great to see you, Bill.
On behalf of Dr. Mark Sykes and John, engineering and producing our show, thank you very much for listening today. We'll do it again at about 23 hours. I'll be ready. Hope you'll be listening. Thanks very much. Be back tomorrow.